recall that there was a section that we felt that it would not be proper for the committee to proceed without the involvement of the NCOP, but also we had open space for
the budget committee, honorable members, staff, and
The way I understood my brief for today was just to look at the two versions possible.
Now, there's the version published in 2005, and the version that last served before the portfolio committee in 2006, 2nd of August 2006. Just to look at them to see what amendment was effected during the period of consideration. And maybe just advise on outstanding issues and a way forward and which to just have a, am I correct with that? I don't know if it's necessary just to go back into some of it, if possible, just to give some context.
I don't know, committee members. Yeah, it'll be useful because some of the members, but be very brief. I know history can be very long. because some of the members were not around when we dealt with it, maybe it could be useful to them. And even those that were around, history can be very long, but also can be very old. So it's useful just, you know, quickly. Right.
It was in 1998-1999 that Parliament considered and passed the Public Finance Management Act to give effect to constitutional requirements to have a uniform set of norms and standards for financial management across the public sector. That's in, I think, 216 or 218 of the Constitution. But it's at that time that the issue also came to the fore. What about Parliament? Should Parliament be included or not? And what is the legislative framework under which Parliament operates? And that legislative framework still applies today, and that is part of the 1963 Powers and Privileges Act, the 1975 Exchequer Act, which is mostly repealed by the PFMA, and now part of the 1999 PFMA. So it was at that time that the issue came to the fore and work started around drafting a bill. It was never concluded. In 2003, we passed the Municipal Finance Management Bill, which sort of took lessons learned from the PFMA up, and then that changed a bit of the wording of how Parliament would draft its own legislation. And then on the third Parliament in 2004, there was once again instructions given to this committee, the Portfolio Committee on Finance, to meet with the Select Committee and to come up with a draft bill, which was then eventually published in 2005. That's a long history in a short word. That's where we are now. Then this bill was under consideration of the committee up till 2nd of August 2006. When certain political input was necessary to finalise the bill. If my memory serves me well, most of the provisions were considered by the committee. There are certain outstanding issues. I'll come back to it at the end, but what complicates things a little bit for us, and it's not an exercise I've undertaken yet, is that there are now supposedly amendments coming to the PFMA. Apparently quite substantial amendments, and one might just want to look at that and maybe have some input from the Treasury to see what are the issues that should be looked at. I mean, for my side, I can highlight one issue, but I'll come back to it at the end. And so political input has now, there's political instructions for this process to be expedited, and we're looking at the two versions today. Now, what I want to say, I don't know if we can skip. The next one, that's fine. It's just sort of the rough framework what I want to use. I'm going to take about 20 minutes of the committee's time for this. When I say minor amendments, I don't mean unimportant amendments or not significant amendments. I mean those are not sort of the core issues in the legislation. I mean, obviously the long title, some changes to the long title, a preamble has been inserted, the issue of the provincial legislatures has not changed, that is just put in a separate section, it was not included in the sort of introduction or the opening section one. The issue of expenditure before the budget is passed, that was not substantially changed, but it's just been more provided in more detail. I mean, we got some input, I think, from Mr. Boerter, Barberton, on how that should be drafted. So it's not a substantial change, but substantive change, I should say. But it's been redrafted a little bit. That is expenditure before the budget is passed. We look at I'll get to that. I'm just trying to find it now to refer to the sections. I didn't put the sections there, but I didn't intend to go clause by clause. The issue of transfers, the same. What happens with transfers is that the original draft, and I can say that as a general comment, did not provide for Parliament's own revenue. It did provide for donor funds, but when we'll see that when we come to the budget of Parliament. It provided for Parliament's voted funds and then some donor funding. So the amendments that were made by the committee looked at what about Parliament's own revenue and how does that work? How does unauthorized expenditure relate to donor funds, own revenue, and your voted funds, etc., etc. The executive directors with financial implications, more detail was imported. The issue of procurement was changed a little bit. To also, that's mainly in terms of excluding certain people contracting with Parliament. And the original draft referred to merely members of provincial legislatures, and our members of provincial executives and municipal or officials and councillors at municipal level has also been inserted. And that's an issue one needs to actually come back to see how workable that option is. Composition of the Audit Committee, I think the Auditor General made a comment there that in the beginning it was 6 members, must be experts and outside Parliament, and the Auditor General said 3 should be enough. There's a footnote to that extent in the bill. The preparation of financial statements, more detail has been provided, quite extensive detail has been put in there, and that's another issue I think we should come back to. And then a schedule for transitional arrangements, that is completely new, that's been inserted. It's quite a useful tool, I think, because clearly there will be a period where this needs to be phased in, like the PFMO was phased in. So the other 4 bullets there, Honourable Chair, is what I would say the more core issues. And if I can just go to the next slide, please. The oversight of the budget of Parliament. Now, I've indicated at the top that the issue here is the role of committees in legislation. And I'll get to that. Just in general, the published version provides for oversight through joint committees, although there's actually a reference just to 1 joint committee in the bill, but it refers to joint committees in the introduction, so in the second section or second clause. And then the Committee on Public Accounts. The version of what the committee considered did not change that at all. Except for some of the functions of the Joint Committee. The Joint Committee in the original draft had to approve the strategic plan, the performance plan, that's the annual performance plan or business plan, and then the budget of Parliament. Now that's, in my opinion, a function of the House, and I think the committee accepted that, and that was put into the committee's draft. Now, the issue, the changes that were made to the oversight mechanism, if I can call it that, that's not the Joint Committee and the Committee on Public Accounts, has been structural. It's merely to put all the issues relating to the composition and functions of the Joint Committee at the beginning. The original version or the published version, that's a little bit scattered, not too much, but it was a bit scattered. Now, the issue here has been that I think it was around about 2000 there was a workshop in Parliament which said we must try and avoid creating committees or creating roles for committees in legislation. The reason being that the Constitution allows Parliament to create committees. There's exceptional issues, for instance, the Joint Standing Committee on Intelligence, the Joint Committee on Defence and so on, is created in the Constitution. The Joint Standing Committee on Intelligence created by the 1994 Intelligence Oversight Act. So there are exceptions. It's not unusual completely to have a committee created in legislation, but one must look at it and make good sense of it. There are various perspectives on this. As I say, the question is, if we create a committee, to what extent? You know, what we're doing in this bill at the moment, we're creating two committees. One is a joint committee, which Parliament must establish. Now, that allows Parliament some leeway. And then the Committee on Public Accounts is now written into this legislation. The issue with that is that at the moment, the Committee on Public Accounts is established in terms of the National Assembly rules, nowhere else. So once we've put that in the legislation, that would be truly then a standing committee. And that was, one might as well call them the Standing Committee on Public Accounts in legislation and deal with that maybe at the same time. But then it would be a committee that after every election, that committee must be established by operation of law. It must be there. So the issues of the NA, at least to the, with reference to the SCOPA, would be that the NA is not entirely free to control and determine its internal arrangements, proceedings, and procedures, because we have to do certain things. So it's an issue for consideration. I mentioned that it's in the Public Audit Act, Parliament created, I think it's Section 10.3, created an oversight mechanism. And that oversight mechanism is translated in parliamentary rules to the Committee on the Auditor General, or as it refers to the Standing Committee on the Auditor General. So those are an option, and I've actually, we've dealt with this at the committee level. That's the one issue. The other issue is, should we remain with the Committee on Public Accounts as a committee which must look at the audited financial statements of Parliament? Then the question must be, what does the NCOP consider appropriate for it? Because the NCOP, similarly to the NA, has the right to determine and control its internal arrangements, proceedings, and procedures. That's Section 70, subsection 1 of the Constitution. In that, if the NCOP passes the bill as it is, with the Public Accounts Committee as it is, and the NA Committee, then they have, in effect, ceded that part of their authority. But they should do so while being well informed. The other option, as I say, is to create a joint mechanism, which is, in my opinion, preferable, joint mechanism to consider Parliament's audit financial statements. And finally, another option would be to look at the Committee on Public Accounts and to say, in this instance, the committee must have an NCOP participation. So those are the issues. As I say, one can be more generic in the legislation and say the audit financial statements must be referred to a joint oversight mechanism of Parliament or a joint committee. The issue with the oversight mechanism is language that the Constitution used. It says the Parliament must provide a mechanism to maintain oversight, but the Constitution creates certain paradigm for committees. Committees have certain rights in terms of the Constitution to call and to summon people to appear before it and so on. So you also have parliamentary privilege in committees. These things come out stronger. So those are the two issues. In my opinion, if one looks at the bill and wants to create a solid oversight mechanism that will strengthen the institutional structure of Parliament, one should look at a joint committee or a joint mechanism, rather than to say your Standing Committee on Public Accounts must do it, but in this instance there must be NCOP participation. I would think it would be for Parliament to decide to say, well, it's a joint mechanism. Who has the capacity to consider audit financial statements? It is either SCOPA, or one can adopt the operating mechanism of SCOPA to get a thorough briefing from the Auditor General on issues, so that we know what are the issues in Parliament's audit report. Thanks, we can go on to that. Now, the annual budget of Parliament and the application of the PFMA. I might just say for information, when I'm saying comparing clause 14 with clause 16, etc., usually the first one which I mentioned would be the published version, and then the second one, a few clauses inserted, that would be the committee's version. As I say, the committee's version, we've put in the adjustments budget, which was not provided for in the original version. The other amendment made was, as I said in the beginning, instead of both, we're using our approved budget, which is a bit broader and includes all aspects of Parliament's finances. The central issue here, as I said in the chapter heading there, is the principle of separation of power. Now, that's a principle, it's not explicit in the Constitution, but it's a principle recognized by the Constitutional Court in the certification judgment and elsewhere. And there's been a few judgments which said that the crux of the, let me not stick my neck out too far, Honorable Chair, there's at least one judgment which looked at the Independent Electoral Commission at that time, it's now the Electoral Commission, which said the issue of the budget is central to your separation of power and to have your independence. So, also from the introduction I gave, we want to have a legislation here that is applicable to Parliament, and that will be the reference point for people who want to see whether Parliament is doing proper financial management. To have it at the moment, where it's scattered across three pieces of legislation, in my opinion, is something we're trying to get away from. So I would firstly say, for that purpose, for practical purposes, let's put it all in one legislation. Let's not have cross-referencing between the PFMA and Parliament financial management. That's a challenging task, but it's well illustrated at this point when we're seeing that there are amendments coming to the PFMA. Now, a question from a legal practitioner is, when you have these amendments and you have earlier legislation referring to the PFMA, what version of the PFMA is it referring to, the amended version or the old version? In strict legal terms, you have a thing called by incorporation by reference. So if you refer to the PFMA at a certain time, you incorporate that section of the PFMA in your legislation, that incorporation by reference. So once that section is amended or even repealed, the original clause is still incorporated. So unless you change the Act again, to say that, I mean, once you change the PFMA, you can also change Parliament's financial management and say that it's referring now to the amended versions or to the PFMA as amended. One can also do that with it. But it becomes a complicated affair, and one can solve it by putting everything in there. So now we have a few references to the PFMA, mostly to the way your budget is drafted and drawn up. Point one and point two, there's also the issue of you have to consult with the Minister of Finance about a procedure to submit your budget. Now, these are not issues which are so repulsive, so shocking that you think, but there goes South Africa, there's no separation of powers anymore. But the principal issue, if one wants to keep it clean, one can say, well, let's not have that. Where it says the budget must be drawn up in accordance with the provisions of the PFMA, one can think of a more generic term there. In my opinion, if you look at the monthly financial reports Parliament must submit later on in the bill, I think it's clause 51. See, the format there is determined by the executive authority, which is your speaker and chairperson acting jointly. One can leave scope for this sort of political consultation to say also your budget and your financial statements must be drawn up in a format determined by the executive authority and leave it like that. Now, some people feel uneasy about that, but what you do there is you leave room for your political processes to have your consultation between the Minister of Finance and the executive authority of Parliament to say, okay, what is it that we want? Keeping in mind, and one can put that as a principle in the legislation, keeping in mind that we want a uniform format for financial statements so that there's a reference point which people in South Africa can understand. That's the intention of, in any case, of the Constitution when it says we want it a uniform procedure or uniform format for your reporting and financial management. So that's my opinion on that. The issue which I would consider quite problematic, Honourable Chair, is, as I said, that clause 71B, 71 sub B of the published version repeals Parliament out of the PFMA. it basically says that wherever there's a reference to Parliament, well, it doesn't say that it affects that, but where there's a reference to Parliament, that's removed. But now, what the committee's version done is has said that PFMA may still apply unless this Act specifically provides for it. So it creates a bit of uncertainty, in my opinion, first of all. Second of all, as I indicate there, the PFMA is really under the administration of the Treasury and the Minister of Finance. So to create the separation of powers as intended in the Constitution, I honestly think that one cannot try to, I don't want to use to subvert or to put this Act subject to the PFMA. One must create a line between the two. For practical purposes of interpretation and for principal purposes of the constitutional principle of separation of powers. The amendment, and I'm not sticking my neck out too far here, Honourable Chair, the amendment to the PFMA, I've been advised, does not refer to Parliament. It is basically taking Parliament out of the PFMA. But I haven't had time to go through the amended PFMA, amendment to the PFMA, so I don't know exactly what it is. But that's an issue, which I will highlight once again when I have that recommendation at the end. Thanks. The issue of your support for political parties in general, for members, I see there's I have an apple at home. Maybe that happens when I work on an apple and then bring it home. The spelling mistake with members. So I know how to spell it. I don't know what happened there, but I'll have to correct that. The original published version distinguished between support for political parties and members and then your support, your constituency support. Now, the amendment the committee made is to put all of that in one and to treat it as almost leaving space for Parliament to call it what you want. Constituency fund support for members, support for political parties, that is okay. But it all must fall under the same principles. And what it does now, it sets out the regulation making powers for the executive authority that must consult with political parties when they draft these issues, these draft provisions or the regulations for constituency funds, political party funding. And then the new provision in the committee's version refers to your constitutional requirements. We had a discussion on that as well at the time. The constitution requires that parties represented in the National Assembly and its leader receives financial assistance to perform their functions in the National Assembly. So one cannot lose that out of sight. One can, from a parliamentary policy perspective, say we're going to provide support for political parties in Parliament, but from the constitution side we must still give effect to that provision that says your represented parties in the National Assembly must get their financial support. But the principles pertaining to that is now the same in the committee's version. The only issue that I highlight there is that the Auditor General is required now to audit political party funding. So political parties must go to the Auditor General. The Auditor General must indicate whether she or she, well, it's he at the moment, has capacity to do this. Of course, the Public Audit Act allows the Auditor General to outsource these functions. And one must compare that to the present situation where an audit is required of political party funding, but it's up to the political party to decide who they want to use, and then also the political party pays through the funds received from Parliament for that audit. In terms of the new draft, the committee's draft of 2 August, Parliament will pay for the Auditor General. In fact, that hasn't changed. It was in the original draft as well. But the issue is there. Is that what we want? Is that what the Auditor General wants? Is that what political parties want? So it is actually something that political parties must come back with to the committee to say the issue pertaining to our audit is not going to work. The issue pertaining to our support and funding, the regulation-making powers, is not going to work. Or it is going to work. It is good. The norms and standards for provincial legislatures is quite an interesting issue. I think the Treasury at a time since said that the issue of Parliament providing for its own financial management creates a gateway for provinces to do the same. And you might then have various pieces of provincial legislation with different norms and standards. So they wanted to create a central point, and the way it's been done is in a separate schedule to the bill at the moment. The problem with that, Honourable Chair, we had a discussion, I say we, it's now the Legal Advisors Forum of all the provinces and national. And in my opinion, I agree with that actually, that if you look at what legislation must be classified as, we're looking at Section 76 classification when we're dealing with norms and standards for provincial legislatures, financial management, because it affects financial interests at provincial level. And one can compare it to the PFMA. This is what happened with the PFMA, if you remember correctly. The chapter on provincial treasuries and so on had to be introduced as an amendment to the PFMA, a 76 amendment, whereas the rest of the PFMA was considered in terms of procedure and Section 75 of the Constitution. So we're dealing with a similar case here. So I think consultation is needed on this, Honourable Chair, to say, are we going to take everything out of the bill and introduce an amendment now or later, and just provide for Parliament in this bill and leave provinces out, and maybe put a memorandum to the bill to say this is the program. The program is, after this bill has been introduced, for provinces to come up with a draft and amend this bill so that they are included. And as I said, there have been meetings about this. There is movement in that direction, as far as I know, from the official side, to come up with a draft that will amend this bill to include provinces. So, Honourable Chair, the question which version to start considering to work with before the committee for practical considerations, and because of the work that was done, money that was invested by Parliament in this process, and I think it was money well spent, is to look at the committee's version, the committee's work, and to look at the issues that's still there. As I say, for me, the one issue that stands out above the rest is the fact that the PFMA is still referred to in the committee's version. I would seriously look at that and try to get everything together in one piece of legislation, and that's in pursuit of the separation of powers principle. And then the other issue is the oversight of Parliament, to look at whether SCOPA, as it is at the moment, will be the appropriate mechanism to have oversight. But just to consider the published version, one can do that as well as an option, and then one can just take out the good work that was done and leave what the committee does not want to bring in. But all roads lead to Rome situation. But I think a lot of work was done already on the committee's version. Of maybe one or two things that needs to be looked at. As I said in the beginning, the last thing I want to comment on is we have no amendments to the PFMA, which we should look at to see how that can affect the financial management principle. There are lessons learned from the Municipal Finance Management Act, which was lessons learned from the first PFMA, or the present PFMA. When one looks at the procurement issues, your supply chain management, the people excluded from contracting to Parliament, same with municipal council, it's a very broad provision. And I can refer the committee, it's quite important just to do that. Prohibition on contract, that would be clause 46 of the committee's version. 46, yes, sir. It says, no contract to provide goods or services to Parliament may be awarded to a member of Parliament or a member of the Cabinet. That I don't see a problem with that. A member of a provincial legislature or a member of a provincial executive council, that's also fine. A municipal councillor, a person in the employ of the state, or any entity in which a person mentioned above is a director or has a controlling or other substantial interest. Now that is a broad provision, which, you know, what is a controlling or controlling, that's fine, that's 50+1. Or other substantial, what is an other substantial interest? Is that my spouse who has 40% shares in a company or what? But more importantly, it refers of course to everybody above. It says it refers to D, which is a person in the employ of the state. So I'm not going to make a conclusion in this, Honourable Chair, but if you look at that, I mean, persons in the employ of the state, that would include all your teachers, your medical practitioners, whether they're part-time or full-time. And one just needs to sit down and think and maybe have a discussion with the Treasury on that. Are we not excluding a too broad a group of people here? Point one. Point two, how do we monitor this? How do we make sure that we do not transgress if it goes through as it is? How do we make sure that we implement that provision? Will we then, every time we contract, we have to ask your contractor, do you have any link whatsoever to the state? And if that must be, then that must be. One must just give effect to it. But we must just consider it a bit. Thank you, Chair. That's it.
Okay, thank you. If I may ask Advocate Jenkins, what is the relevance of the Premier of the Eastern Cape your opening and your closing? You've got the face of the Premier of the Eastern Cape. You want to respond to it?
This is our standard presentation with our new emblems. I could get the one with the pictures or without the pictures. I prefer the one with the pictures. There's a human face to financial management.
Okay. There we have it, members. Advocate Jenkins has presented to us both the versions. And at the end, he seems to be leaning on the fact that the committee had put in work in this. And the version of the 2nd of August 2006 is the one that he refers to as the one that the committee had put work in. But then he raises a number of issues that might need looking into before the bill is dealt with. There is the issue of the PFMA that the Advocate Jenkins raises. There is the issue of the inclusion of provinces under the current form, whether the bill remains in Section 75, whether we can legislate for provinces. And then there is the issue of the oversight mechanism that includes the Committee on Public Accounts. And also the matter of political party funding and the consultation process that we had said should also be concluded ourselves before we conclude this piece of legislation. If there are any questions, comments from members, we will take that now, and then this committee will then decide how we proceed with this legislation as we move forward. What were you doing with your hand? Okay, Mr. Mare. But Brady had also written. No, but he had written. So it's not just me. There's a gesture that you did that indicated you wanted to. Exactly. Thank you. Mr. Mare.
Thank you, Chair. Obviously, this is a quite an important piece of legislation that we have to look at. My biggest concern or immediate concern is what the advocate has raised in his principle one issue on the rules of the committee in legislation. Now he asked there whether the bill should be specific to define and establish a joint committee. And to what extent? The one thing about SCOPA is obviously one always has the idea that SCOPA acts retroactively. And obviously you want oversight, immediate oversight and continuous oversight. So that is a major emphasis that one must make sure about. What is the idea of a joint committee? Are you talking about a joint committee in terms of political parties? Are you talking about a joint committee between various other committees? Which are those committees? And where will this be situated? Will it be situated on a committee level here or, for instance, amongst the whippery? Because somewhere you must, where the oversight is and where the checks and balances will be established, but must be close enough to the executive that you can interact. Because if it's once a quarter, once a year, once and twice a year, then biannually, then everything is retroactive, and then you become a rubber stamp. So I just want more clarity and ideas on that, because that's a real concern. Thank you, sir.
Okay, I would imagine that some of the answers are in the bill itself, because that the joint committee is also defined in the bill, that if people with sharp eyes, that's why we circulated the bill before we came here, but the purpose of this engagement is precisely to clarify ourselves on some of those things. But yeah, let's take the next one was Mr. Singh.
Thank you, Chair. Yeah, and thanks for the briefing, Advocate. Now, from what I read here, this legislation will be applicable to Parliament, meaning NCOP and here, and the provinces must adopt their own legislation as set out in Schedule 1. But you refer to norms and standards. But I see in Schedule 1 there you've got provinces should identify an individual or body as the executive authority. Now, here it's the chairperson of the NCOP and the Speaker of Parliament, which are the executive authority. But here you refer to individual or body. Now, is it contemplated that they could set up some other executive authority? And, I mean, isn't there something, some grey area there? And then on the question of procurement, the Clause 46 that you referred to, you know, that's something that I flagged myself. It can be something that you will not be able to monitor, and I think it needs to be more explicit. I mean, if it's procurement in Parliament, then we should have certain provisions that certain people are excluded from contracting with Parliament. But if it's in provinces and municipalities, then I think there should be other provisions which should not be included here, but should be under the broad norms and standards. But lastly, aren't we being player and referee here in this legislation? I mean, we are Parliament. We've got a speaker, we've got NCOP, each one of us sitting here are part and parcel of Parliament, and we monitoring what happens to our own funds, that we've got people responsible for, like the speaker and the chairperson of the NCOP. They are the executing authority, but we are actually, we'll be questioning ourselves in a committee as to the expenditure.
Thank you, Chair. Mine is just more general comments. Chair, my first comment would be on the issue of scope. We have gone through that document at length, you know, to try to come to a common agreement, but that was difficult. You know, there was a view at that stage that SCOPA is responsible for overlooking what the job of the Auditor General, because that's the job of passing the national budget lies with the National Assembly. That was the argument. But I'm saying we should be open to this new view, to say that we should have a joint oversight mechanism or committee. Just to try to accommodate that other view. But the same comment I have is on procurement. Section 46. I think at that stage when we excluded these four categories of people, we're borrowing that mainly from the Municipal Finance Management Act. Because the Municipal Finance Management Act explicitly states that certain categories of people should be excluded, and that was effected through regulation. And I'm still of a strong view that we should retain as we proceed. I mean, there are valid reasons why we should retain Section 46, but then clarify the D, which is a person in the employ of the state. Because at that stage, I think our argument was that we should, and the focus was to exclude members of staff of Parliament. Because you can't just exclude members of Parliament from procurement, and then on the other hand, open it up for members of staff of Parliament, you know, and they are the ones who are critical in the decision making of those tenders. So I think that's a point we should not lose sight of. Chair, the other issue is on the issue of support for members and political parties. I think we need to revisit this matter because from my own perspective, that the party that can easily meet the requirements of this section will be the African National Congress. And smaller parties will struggle. If you go through what is stipulated within the Act, within the bill, a lot of smaller parties will struggle, and I think we haven't consulted them thoroughly. And we should acknowledge that and not impose our views on all parties. So I think the matter, as far as I'm concerned, should be removed and be left with the Chief Whip's Forum to discuss and then come to a finality. If they say they are agreeing to this proposal, then we should bring it back. But I would really caution us not to impose, especially the African National Congress, to impose our views on smaller parties. The last one, which I have major problems with, it's the issue of the PFMA. I agree with the separation of power, and that it should be reflected within the bill. But we need to be very cautious to say that Parliament is totally excluded from all sections of the PFMA. I don't know the implications of it. I mean, I don't know what might happen in the future. I know we don't have borrowing powers. I'm just thinking on my feet now. But then if you say, let's assume, I'm just bringing something which might not be practical. If let's say we exclude them totally, and then Parliament has borrowing powers, they go and borrow. What then happens? Who must bail out when things go wrong? Because we have excluded them from the requirements, the strict requirements of the PFMA. I'm just saying, let's think about it and what are the possible implications. Chair, I think those are the four issues that I want to take. Look, I don't expect Advocate Jenkins to have answers to the questions that members raise, except for, you know, some of the you know, administrative and textual issues that are on the bill, just to, you know, clarify those. But other than that, the answers lie with us. They lie with this committee that should take decisions. But then, of course, on matters that might be legal, constitutional, and otherwise, we need to be guided. But, Advocate Jenkins, you will respond to those that you think you can, and then also perhaps guide us on those that still further engagement with them amongst ourselves, because that's what we'll have to do from now on.
Yeah. Thank you, Honourable Chair. I'll take it from the top, Mr. Marais' question on the where is the joint committee going to be situated and scope. And, you know, for clarity's sake, I can just say this. Two committees that's been established in this bill. One is more generic than the other. The other is specific. The specific one is SCOPA. The other one is more generic. It's a joint committee must be established, and the executive authority may not be members of this committee. They may participate only when requested by the committee, and so on. Which in itself is something to consider, because you do want that engagement from the people who's making the decisions. For instance, the executive authority will decide to give instructions for certain expenditures which might not have been provided for in your budget and so on. But then one can request them. Clearly what you don't want is you don't want the executive authority to chair the joint committee. If you look at the functions of the joint committee, that's the committee that will consider the budget of Parliament. Start from the budget, the performance plan, and the strategic plan, and make a recommendation to the Houses to adopt or to reject, but I mean, to note that. So what will happen, that's the forward-looking, much some combination of the Joint Budget Committee and the Portfolio Committee and Select Committee on Finance. That role that Joint Committee will play with reference to Parliament issues. So one can come up with a creative structure to, we always have issues with committees, you don't want too many committees, so one can even put this function within one of the existing committees, should it be. But then it is removed, as you said, removed from the decision-making. At the moment, there's this, the body called the Parliament Oversight Authority, which is a multi-party structure consisting of the chief whips, the executive authority, and the secretary to Parliament and ex officio member of this structure. They are considering, or they are in charge, or this body, as you say, is in charge of implementing the policy adopted by the Houses. So they give policy directives to the secretary to Parliament. That's why the secretary is there. This is part of the new governance structure, which was adopted in 2005, but it has actually only gone through the Houses in 2007. I think what we need to do, or what Parliament needs in this instance, is something similar, something a bit closer to the decision-making powers of Parliament, with senior members in that committee, but it cannot be chaired by the executive authority. That is also clear. Whether the executive authority may be members, or may be requested, or may be members, but they don't have a right to vote in that committee and so on, that's something for the committee to decide. But the issue is there that we need a committee that can make a recommendation to the Houses about the budget, whether it's a good budget, whether it's missing the priorities of government or missing the priorities that Parliament has decided to do, whether it's big or too small or whatever. That part, that's the forward-looking part. The backward-looking part is scope issue. And as you say, that is the issue that's going to consider the Auditor General's report and so on. And that is something we have to think of. And like this Malata said, we need to think of, is this appropriate for Parliament? Now, there are differences between Parliament and government departments. Parliament is, if I can put it like that, a step. It's not a department. Parliament is an arm of government, a branch of government. It's not a department of finance or the department of water affairs and forestry or something. Therefore, Parliament is different. Therefore, Parliament is treated differently. But also, Parliament is made of multi-parties. Politics in Parliament, in that sense. So, and this is coming to Mr. Singh's argument a bit, that we are both the player and the referee. Yes, we are. I mean, I've discussed this with a friend, one of your citizens of KwaZulu-Natal as well. He's a businessman there, so I discuss these things with him a bit. He said, what you're wanting is you want to write your own checks and authorize your own checks and pay your own checks. Doesn't feel nice to say that, but that is more where we're going to. That is what. But because Parliament is made up of multiple parties, that can happen because you have those sort of internal checks and balances. And it's an issue Parliament across the world deals with. There have been questions to say, well, look, we have an audit committee that looks at certain things. An audit committee is made up of at least, you know, in the committee's version, three outside members with certain expertise. Now, that's also a check and balance. If you want to look at the joint committee that must make recommendations, one can even say that they should have some independent people as well. But the issue of multi-parties should balance it out. You know, at least you will have opposition voices. You might have minority voices that might agree with the majority and so on, but that interplay happens. But to come back to the issue of the joint committee, you know, there's no definition. The definition in the bill doesn't refer to multi-party structure. So that one can look at. One can look at the composition of the Parliamentary Oversight Authority, which is a specific multi-party structure made up of senior whips. To see, isn't that something we should go towards? And maybe not write, but one can refer to in the bill, as to say, that the joint committee is a committee established in terms of this section, and it must have consist of multiple political parties. Senior members, or don't have to say senior members, parties can decide who they want to deploy to that committee.
Advocate Jenkins, perhaps whilst on that one. In the bill it says that representation on the joint committee must be in accordance with the joint rules of Parliament. Don't the joint rules of Parliament give you anything? No. So it is taken care of. Okay. And there is also another very dangerous concept that is about referring to senior members of Parliament. What are senior members of Parliament?
Sorry. No, you're correct. What is a senior member? There's no definition for that.
Yeah. You could be senior in a political party, but that does not necessarily mean you're a senior member of Parliament. Yeah. go ahead.
Thanks. Thank you for that, Chair. So then that is taken care of. The question of Mr. Singh about the executive authority of provinces in the schedule. The schedule, unfortunately, is a product, unfortunately, in a good sense, if you can. It's a product of trying to stay within the ambit of Section 75, trying not to go into the issue where we're going to affect the financial interests of a province. But when one reads Section 76 of the Constitution, that sets out what legislation must be considered in terms of Section 76, and that means that provinces must vote on it, per province, so not mandate to vote on a bill. It says that a bill must be dealt with, I'm referring to sub 4 of the schedule of Section 76. A bill must be dealt with in accordance with the procedure established by subsection 1 if it provides for legislation envisaged in Chapter 13, and that's the issue about the Treasury and the unified norms and standards and so on, and which includes any provision, I want to emphasize any provision, affecting the financial interest. That was an amendment made because there's an issue of many bills affect many areas, some bills affect provinces to a lesser extent, others more. And when it's only subordinate, then we still pass the legislation in terms of Section 75 procedure, and NCOP votes per delegate and not per province. So this was then amended to say that when there's any provision affecting the financial interest, it's not considered in terms of Section 76. So really we're trying with this schedule to come around it. To be honest, I don't think we're getting around it. I think it still affects. I mean, we're still saying your norms and standards must be in accordance with these. What if it's not? Are we going to have then Premier of Eastern Cape against President of the Republic of South Africa and the Speaker of the National Assembly going to court saying this legislation is not in terms of what national legislation should be? So I would say that the provinces, there might be consultation necessary, but the provinces should be included in this legislation. I mean, the issue of finances, the issue of treasury is a national issue. Provincial treasuries are created with BFMA, not by the Constitution. The Constitution creates the national treasury only. So it's also not a Schedule 4 matter. So the issue of providing for your unified norms and standards in national legislation is in order, in my opinion. But that legislation, when it affects a province, must be passed in terms of the procedure in Section 76. So I would say let's think about it. It might be good to remove that schedule and to indicate somewhere, not in the legislation, that we're going to come back with an amendment, either at the same time, if it's ready, or at a later date. But it must also happen quite speedily, because the provinces need this legislation to guide their financial management. And they, in the same way as the separation of powers between the executive and the legislature at national level, it's at provincial level as well. So that must happen. The procurement issue, I don't think I can say more. I would agree. Where it makes a lot of sense to say a person in the employ of the state is that staff member, whether you contracted for a period or whether you're on indefinite employment of Parliament, should not be able to contract with Parliament for service. I mean, it would be nice for me to do it in my career, but clearly you cannot. The decision making happens at the administration level about who contracts with Parliament or not. We have a procurement committee, and the Secretary to Parliament as accounting officer makes the final decision. So to have then a staff member contracting with Parliament creates the impression of bias. Whether it is bias or not, it's another issue, but it creates the impression. So there should be, in my opinion, a block to it. I mean, I'm not an expert on this, but I would say block that. But at the same instance, if we're taking Parliament to the people, we're going to where we went earlier this year or last year to Mzana, there might be a teacher who needs to send the children to school or something, and they have a catering service on the side, and now Parliament cannot contract with them because she's in the employ of the state. And there's no issue of bias there, in my opinion. Yes, or hire buses or something like that. Your specific... sorry. Mr. Lato, the comments of Scalper, yeah, I think they're correct. And the issue of the PFMA, well, look, the issue with this legislation is not to create separate norms and standards. Separate only in the sense of separation of powers, but it should be aligned. When, as a normal South African, a normal South African, I'm going, normal and senior South African, if you're coming from the public's perspective, you want to see what is happening with my money, with my taxpayers' money. You don't want to read one set of financial statements and make sense of it, and then you read Parliament, and you cannot make sense of it because it's set up completely differently. There should be a lot, if not the same. There should be a synergy between them. They should fit into one another. The Minister of Finance must also be able to have a consolidated financial report. So whilst I'm saying let's create a separation between the PFMA and Parliament's financial management, we must create a mechanism to say, but we still need that uniformity. But the decision, the sort of obligation that Parliament must comply with this format, I would say that decision or that instruction must come from Parliament's Treasury, which is the Speaker and the Chairperson acting jointly, who are accountable to the House. They're not acting as on their own. They're acting on a mandate from a House when they're making certain regulations to say this is the way we should go, or these are the format that we should have or not.
Okay, and I think we've also come to two points that also relate to the NCOP, and that is one of the reasons why we had said that when next we move forward with this, it would be recommended that we sit jointly with the Select Committee on Finance. These two areas relate to, one, the issue of SCOPA and whether the FUP is of the view that it allocates its authority to an NA-only committee to oversee, because the institution we're talking to, the definition of parliament, includes both houses. That's the first one. But then again, it comes to the matter that Advocate Jenkins talks to, which relates to where the provinces would have to come up with their own legislation, or whether there should be legislation, I mean, in that case, which means this legislation should be dealt with under Section 76, where provinces would then have to vote as provinces, where the NCOP would have to vote as provinces on this piece of legislation. But then I think we must take Advocate Jenkins' point that we should draw some lessons from how the PFMA itself was drafted when it came to the issue of provincial treasury. Are there any further questions? Because I want us to conclude this session where we have taken a briefing and members are fully appraised of what is contained and where the areas that would need further engagement. And I would want to urge members, there are matters where we said members should also seek, we should also find political consensus on, and I would want to recommend that members also go back to, we all go back to our political parties with those areas that still require political consensus, so that we can then come back here and look at those. But I'm saying the next session would also have to include the NCOP component, should be the Select Committee on Finance. And I would want to join the Budget Committee. Is there anything you want to raise? Because your presence here adds value. It also brings in an NCOP component, but not completely, because we would have this Select Committee. We would want to have this Select Committee also as a clear. Is there anything?
I don't think there's anything. If there was anything, Ms. Robinson from the Joint Budget, Mr. Swart, they would have made comments if there are some issues. No, I wouldn't. But so if they haven't raised anything, I think they are satisfied. And let's leave it there.
Okay, you know, also legal people, please help here. Mr. Mlodo raised the point with regard to total exclusion, and we have responded to that question of the PFMA in this legislation. And I think I take your point when you say this legislation must be aligned to the PFMA, but referring to the PFMA, we're bordering on the danger when the PFMA gets amended, it means that this piece of legislation also gets affected. I don't know how that is going to be taken care of, but I think that it is one of the things we would have to look into. But there is a lot of cross-referencing into the PFMA,
which I would imagine we would have to clean in the those cross references. And this is a very interesting section of the PFMA that says that also in order to amend the PFMA, you have to get, in a sense, it says you must get permission from the Minister of Finance. That would be the same. But legal people, can you? Yeah, and then section 46, Mr. Mlodo recommended that it be referred to the Chief Whip's Forum, where all political parties sit. We had referred to, is it 34? Did I say 46? Support for members. That's 34. The entire section 34. Can I request that, we represent our political parties as well here, that we also ensure that, that also, gets dealt with at that forum, because if I had my way, it wouldn't belong to this legislation until there is that political Are we agreed? Okay, thanks, Advocate Jenkins. We will let you know when our next meeting is, but can we request that, the issue of cleaning up of the bill, if you could, even if you do not put it in the bill itself, but if you could just draft something that would then talk to the bill, and then we ensure that we also invite the NCOP and the Joint Budget Committee to make our permanent ally here. Okay, thank you, members. I know that some members are also preparing for the debate. This is an opportunity for you to bring the tea outside. Yeah, and can I request that members don't leave us with fruitless expenditure outside. There will be tea. If it's late, if we could just delay a bit and grab our tea before we leave. Thank you.
Thank you.